Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 193. Jeez, 193, that's a lot. So I want to welcome all of you to this episode of Wargaming Recon and let you know about one very important thing, because we're going to talk about a lot of things on the show, and I don't expect you to remember them all, really. Just remember the link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR193. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR193, and that'll get you right in, and you'll be all set. So today I am joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
Hey, John. Doing good.
I am excited that you're here, and I can tell you are too.
I'm excited that you're excited that I'm here. You should be excited that I'm here.
Yeah, why wouldn't I be?
No reason at all.
Exactly. So today, we're talking about something pretty amazing. And I think we both own it. Or at least, I know we both have seen it in person.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Wargamers Terrain Hedgerows. And we've talked about Wargamers Terrain before, so I don't think we need to talk about the company so much as the product. And do you have one of these or a few of them, Adrian?
No, I didn't actually buy the hedgerows. I bought...
Mistake.
Well, it's not like I can't buy them now, but yeah, at Huzzah, I had specifically in mind things for a Civil War game that I want to do, so that's what I kind of geared all my purchases toward, and hedgerows didn't fit the bill.
It's funny that you say, oh, it's not like you can't buy it now, but you kind of can't. And we'll get to that in a moment, but at least not easily anyway.
Yeah.
So the hedgerows, and I actually have some here that I can show everyone. And I say show, and of course, a lot of you are listening because it's an audio podcast, but we do video as well. Wargaming Recon is a multimedia, whatever you want to call it.
So empire.
Yeah, sure. That's what we are. We are amazingly large and cool. But we do audio podcasts, which is how everyone knows us. But we do the video, so we're on YouTube and wherever the heck else that the video goes. But I happened to buy, unlike someone, at Huzzah 2017 from Wargamers Terrain at the vendor table. And it's very important to support vendors when you go to those cons. I picked up some of these. And he actually didn't have the size that I needed. Or let me rephrase. He didn't have the size I wanted. Because it's a need, right? So he had to make them for me. So he custom made them. Because he had sold out of the size I wanted. So these are 9-inch hedgerows. I got four of them, $9 a pop. So as you can tell, they look familiar in that he uses the same compound, if you can see, same compound as he does on the flex, what's he call them? The flex fences, the stone fences. Yeah. I know you have a bunch of those, Adrian, and I have a few as well. So I'm sure you've seen this compound if you looked underneath your flex fence.
Yep.
And if you don't have a flex fence or hedgerows, I think he's going to be calling them flex hedges, I think is what he's going to eventually call them. But he's referred them to me as hedgerows. But if you'll see this. And this compound is the wonderful thing that makes them flex. They come in other sizes. I think you can get 6 inches. You can, I think he even does like 4 inches or whatever. I just kind of figured like at $9 for a 9-inch is roughly an inch a hedgerow. And a dollar per inch, and I think the smaller sizes ended up being a little bit more per inch. And I was like, why wouldn't I want a 9-inch? Because I can use this for 28 mil. We can use it for bolt action, right? We can use it. I mean, it'd be a little high, but we could use it for 15 for American Civil War. For it would be stretching. We could use it 10 mil for Rev War because get that 10 mil thing. Yeah, you could use it actually for 54 mil if you wanted. It's not going to be head draw, but it's going to scale, so you can do a lot of different things with it. He themes it, I guess is the best way to refer to it. Same way he does his other stuff. So you see he has like clump foliage on, there's twigs, there's pebbles and flock and static grass. A lot of natural materials, a lot of things that he can get in his neck of the woods, just from his environment, actually. He's in Western Massachusetts. And as I'm saying this and holding it up, I'm making a gigantic mess on my laptop. And that's one of the things that you should be aware of with any of his product, but especially these in the flex fences. When you first get them, things are going to fall off. And Adrian, I don't know if you remember when I was talking with you a while ago about the flex fences. And I had said like how I kind of freaked out a little bit when I first started bending them, because I was like, why are all the things falling off?
Yeah, and I told you all you had to do was read the sheet of paper that came in the box.
Exactly. So you get a sheet of paper with instructions. And I know it sounds dumb, right, to have instructions for terrain, but kind of important, because like a guy, I was like, I don't need instructions. I will skip that. What's that going to say? It's a hedgerow. What can I do? It warns you, basically, that like he put extra stuff on it so that knowing things are going to fall off. So that way, when he puts extra on, it's still going to look good and it's not going to look like a piece of crap. Whereas if you just put what would be on after things fell off, it would look like crap. And he knows that no matter what he does, stuff's going to fall off the first time you use it or the first few times. It's normal. It's okay. And if it really bothers you, you can put it back in and stuff. But like, it's fine. And so like, stuff's fall off. It looks good. I like the look of it. What did you think about them when you saw them at Huzzah?
Oh, I liked them a lot. Like I say, I went there with a specific stuff in mind that I wanted to buy, and the hedgerows didn't really fit into the what I was looking to pick up. But no, they're very well. All the terrain that they do is really nice. But I like it. I will say this: when you say hedgerow, you tend to think of like the hedgerows in Normandy.
I do. I think of the bocage.
Yeah, and that these, well, you can see it looking at it there. These don't really resemble that, but no, it's very.
What do you think they do resemble? Because, I can't quite figure out what I would say to like if I said to someone hedgerows. I think you're right that they're going to think of the bocage, but if I was to describe these to someone who's never seen them before, like, what would you call it? I almost think like earthenworks.
I suppose you could call it that. If you wanted to describe it to somebody, like if you're walking through, the type of what it looks like to me is like in Pennsylvania anyway, if you're walking through farmers' fields, the borders of the fields where they've cut down the trees and everything.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of what it looks like when you're stomping through those fields looking for grouse or whatever. They're all over the place. That's what they look like to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, although they don't immediately make me think of a hedgerow, at least not what I have in my mind as a hedgerow.
Yeah.
This is something he wanted feedback for it. So when we first saw it, I got in touch. And I know you and I had talked to the cotton. I think we talked about it in the Huzzah episode. I don't have the link to it.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah.
What was it? Episode 180 something or whatever.
Sure.
But I think we talked about it. And I sent him an email because he's a really nice guy, Joe, the guy who owns the company. And I was like, they look really good, but here are some things. And I think he said he was even going to work on them some more. So he was selling them, but it's almost like a prototype, but it's not an alpha for those of you who know anything about computers. I'd call it beta, right? Or 1.0 maybe?
Well, it's definitely at least a beta because it's in someone's hands other than his. So yeah.
I think they look good. I like the feel of them. They're light, but they feel substantial.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're really nice. I think they would work best probably for 15 millimeters, at least the ones you got. But yeah, no, they're really nice.
Yeah, and the height, as far as I know, at least for these, the height, this is standard, right?
Yeah.
So no. I was looking to see if I had a measuring tape handy so I could just be like, let me see how tall they are. They're definitely 9 inches, but I'm going to guess a quarter of an inch tall.
Yeah.
I might be wrong about that. I'm not so good with that kind of stuff, but and they're probably what, like quarter inch, half inch across, something like that.
Yeah.
So you get a bunch of them, you put them on the table, and you're gonna have things that look good. Each piece is unique in that it's impossible for him to make them exactly identical, right? But I think that's part of the charm, because if you just had a bunch of things that looked exactly the same, And you can get that with any of those like large scale companies. You buy hedgerows or fences or whatever, they're all going to look exactly the same. But this has that artisan touch to it, so it's going to help your table to stand out. And that's something I think we should talk about a little bit later in the show. I think anyone who's really looking for terrain is going to love these. If you're doing something in like North America, the Western Europe theater of almost anything, and maybe even parts of Asia, like I could see it in Japan, right? If you're doing some samurai stuff for Test of Honor.
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably the only place it really wouldn't work would be like North Africa or, you know, someplace like that. But
India, maybe, like or South America, of course. I know they have areas that this would work.
Yeah.
But in general, you say South America and you think of the rainforest, you think very tropical, right? Don't you?
I do, yeah. That's probably the wrong impression, but that's what I think about.
It might be very ethnophobic of me or geophobic of me.
Whatever.
I don't mean to be, but like for a large part of Russia, even like this just wouldn't work because it's even when it's not like freezing cold, I don't imagine you can have a whole lot of this over in Russia or in any of the former, you know, satellite republics or any of that kind of stuff. Or
I don't know. There's places it would work. But yeah, when you think of the Russian battlefields, you tend to think of relatively open, like steppe terrain, things like that. So yeah, maybe you couldn't use it there. But
yeah, Western China, it's not going to work. Maybe Eastern China. And do you know what? Right now, we're recording this in middle end of September of 2017. And so right now on PBS, there's a big ado about this documentary series by Ken Burns that's talking about the Vietnam War. Not going to work in Vietnam. So if you're doing modern, you're doing that Team Yankee, not going to be good for you. You can integrate it, but like again, you think of the dense jungles, right?
Yeah.
All that lush tropical stuff and the issues there with that. Maybe I'm wrong. I think this works for like 60-70% of the planet.
Well, yeah, and when you consider what people actually war game, it probably works for 90% of that.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think it works for the variety of scales. And you had made a remark about, oh, well, I can just go and buy it. You can and you can't. So it's odd. I feel really weird about us talking about a product and reviewing it that people can't really get. Because it's just like, why are we doing it, right?
Well, yeah, but well, go ahead.
So because I double checked yesterday before we were going to record and everything, because I wanted to make sure. He doesn't, at least I'm going to preface it by saying I couldn't find it, but he doesn't have it for sale on his website. And that's how you order things from him, unless you go to a con and you see him in person where he has a vendor booth or something.
Yeah.
So you go and you order it on the website. It's really easy. He does it through like a PayPal checkout and you're golden. It's not there. And I thought like maybe it has its own thing. It doesn't have its own section. I was like, okay, so where do I look next? So what's its closest to? I'm like the closest cousin to it, right? Are the flex fences. So I'm looking flex fences and then I do all the drop downs because you have a drop down, like you choose the size you want. And do you want 15 mil? Do you want the 25/28 mil? You know, what kind of colors and all that kind of stuff. Yep. So I'm doing all the drop downs, you know, like it's not in a drop down. It's not an add-on option. And I'm looking. I can't find it. So I'm going to presume you could order it if you contacted him. So if you sent him an email through information on his website, we'll have a link in our show notes. I believe you could order it then. Otherwise, you're going to have to hit him up at a place that he has a vendor booth. And I think, well, the next one I know of that he'll be at is Huzzah 2018, which is a long time to go.
Yeah. So
I don't quite know.
But like you said, he was going to rework them too, so he might still be in the process of that. They may actually not be available yet. Hopefully, he'll see the episode and can check in.
Well, I mean, I'll send it to him because he likes to hear from us. That makes me sound really conceited. But he appreciates all feedback and input. No, he does. He's like, he likes to hear from us because we're special, all right? So why wouldn't he?
Yeah, you are.
I mean, he knows who I am.
Yes.
But no, like he wants to hear from people. And you raise a good point, Adrian, that maybe because he wants to tweak it based off of some feedback that we've given to him, they might not be up there. But he works pretty quickly because he first told me about these, I'm going to say right around January. He's like, I got this thing in works. I don't want you guys to look at it. And then February, he's like, it's going to be at Huzzah. I want you to look at it at Huzzah and give feedback. He's like, I want your whole team to chime in. And do you remember me saying, like, you got to come because we got to go to his table. Once you, I can introduce you, but you got to give him feedback about this stuff. And you're like, what? I was like, no, really, he wants it. And that's pretty fast in this kind of thing, right? It's one man's shop.
Yeah.
Doing, and he was filling orders that whole time, too. And it takes a while to do all the orders and make, because he makes this stuff. If he goes to, you know, a con, he's going to make a bunch of it. But otherwise, he makes it an order.
Yeah.
Whatever you want, he'll do it. So the fact that he worked pretty quickly tells me he would do any adjustments pretty quickly. So I'm a little confused why it's not on his website yet.
Yeah, I suspect that's why, though. I mean, Huzzah was what, May, June, so it's what, maybe 4 months?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or maybe I'm just antsy because I like them. I'm, again, they don't make me think of the Bocage because they're not. But I like them and I want more of them.
Yeah.
I was actually looking for my receipt the other day to try to figure out exactly how much it was for these because they weren't on the website. And I went and I looked and I was like, oh, how much did I spend? And I was like, wow, I spent a lot of money because the receipt is like almost $100. I was like, I didn't spend $100 on these things. Like, how am I good? And it turned out because I bought other things. But for $9 a pop, I think it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
So would you give it 2 thumbs up?
Yeah, I definitely would. Yeah, particularly for the price, $9 for the 9 inches worth. I mean, it would take me a month to put something like that together, and I would be cussing and swearing the whole time because I hate doing terrain. So it would be worth it to me at twice the price.
Well, I think like the 6-inch ones are like $8 maybe or $8.50 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he does, I think he goes down to the 4 inches. I think might be the smallest. I might be wrong on that. I think they're a really good product. What else do you think about it? Do you like things that you really like about the Majorian or things that you don't like or areas of improvement?
No, we've covered it all. I mean, areas of improvement, I don't know. It'd be nice to see if he could do like a little more variety, like actual Normandy hedgerows. And maybe that's something that he's got in mind to work on. I don't know. But that would kind of be the only thing I could think of to make it look. Because what it sort of looks like a little bit is like an earthen embankment, sort of. Which is cool. But to have it be maybe a little bit more hedgy. I don't know exactly what that means, more hedgy. But
no, do you know what though? You nailed it. And I couldn't phrase it until you said that and it popped in my head. It's the hedgerow minus the hedge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's
the actual row.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the shrubbery on it. I mean, yeah. It does a little, but it doesn't have, you need your shrubs on it.
Yeah.
You need like your 6-foot shrubs to block everything. So I can hide my tank behind it and you're not going to see it.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
or
you don't
killer piece or whatever.
You know, you don't necessarily want them all to look like that because not everybody needs Normandy Bocage. But yeah, some more bushiness to it might be the only thing I would add to it in terms of improvement, I think. But the the flex terrain is great. I love the walls that we've got. So yeah, okay, fine. It's a stone wall, but okay, a fence.
No, I agree with you. But you say a wall, and people think like castle walls.
Oh yeah, so yeah. I see what you're saying.
I was okay, corrected, yeah. Not by him, but by someone else who was like. Because I referred to them as walls once, and they're like, well, a wall's actually like the side of a house or a castle. And I was like, oh, you know, fair point. So that's why they're fences.
Okay, that's not too pedantic or anything. All right.
Maybe they're a rivet counter. I don't know. The color of my buttons and facings just don't match for the time period I want. They were wrong because for 2 weeks of this month, they changed. And then
And they never had pewter buttons. Yeah, and you know that because you were there. Okay, all right, thanks. Anyway, yeah, 2 thumbs up for the hedgerows. I like them a lot.
I got to say, try to buy them. If they're on the website, great. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. If not, send them an email, really, and be like, hey, we heard about it on Wargaming Recon. We saw it in the video. We want to buy them. Can you get some ready for us? And I think just knowing that people want them will be helpful because they're a new product. So any new product, you never really know how it's going to do. So he sold out of what he had in the other, in this size and some other sizes, yeah. But he did still have some left. And even though he sold out, what's that? Like he may have had like 3 of a size or something like that.
I'm not even sure. I don't think he brought that many of the hedgerows because, well, like you say, they were new. So
he had at most 6 or 8 of them total there of all the sizes.
Yeah.
So like selling out is great, but like, if you have 2 things and you sell it out of 2, you can say, yay, sold out, but these whole two things. And so it's hard for them to gauge interest, right?
Yeah.
If we're done with talking about the terrain hedges, why don't we move on to talking about model box?
Sure.
So you went on the model box review. That was episode 186. And some people who listen to the show, you guys and ladies, because I know there are ladies who listen, which makes me actually quite happy. We talked about model box, and people might be like, why are we going to talk about model box again? Are you curious about that, Adrian?
I think I know why, but since you're asking a question, yes, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, I'm very curious.
That doesn't sound contrived or pedantic at all. So there's been a lot of discussion about model box, and not just here on the show, but just with people in general out there, but also people who I know. A lot of discussion about model box. And in our review, Mike Payne joined me as co-host, and Mike was not a fan. He was just about as big of a non-fan as you can be. And that's not against Mike. You completely entitled to your opinion, and I understand where he was coming from.
Yeah.
So he's like, what's the point? You never know what you're going to get. And what if you get something that you don't want? So, like, we got the review box that they gave. I'm very appreciative that they sent it. But it was Barbarians. And so in that episode, I was like, oh, it's Barbarians. And what do I want with Barbarians? Because I'm not going to do anything with them, right? And he's like, yeah, if it's not what you want, then, like, what the heck? You never know. Every month's going to be different, the theming, and you don't know. And so I was very much, as I tend to do when I haven't completely made up my mind, I was on the fence.
Yeah.
And that just like, yeah, I guess maybe. And I think we officially came out and said, like, it could be good as a gift idea. We're coming up on the holiday season. So no matter what you celebrate or don't celebrate, gift buying usually requirements and opportunities for people. And we're like, oh, it could be good. Someone's birthday, or you don't know what to get them, so you get this. Or someone new to the hobby, they might want to do it so they can get a few different pieces easily. And just try out different manufacturers and stuff like that. And I still stand by that. I think that those are really good options for it. But then we did an episode right after that, episode 187, where we talked about the Maine Historical Wargames Association, and Joshua Johnson came on as a guest, and he was over the moon for Model Box. he doesn't have it, to my knowledge. He's never subscribed, but he loved the idea. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, for like the two of you who don't understand what these things are, it's a subscription service. So every month you get a box, a crate, you get a thing, a package, right? And it contains a variety of unknown items for you. There's surprises. They could be nice treasure. They could be a pile of junk. You don't know.
Well, it's probably never going to be a pile of junk, but.
Well, eye in the beholder, right?
Yeah. Because
I'm not saying it's junk, and I'm still. Even though I use it, but like, I got the Barbarians and I looked in and I was like, oh, it's Barbarians. And I was disappointed because I was so excited about Model Box. I was like, oh, there's a thing that's for wargamers like us and not just like those loot crates and those whatever and the tea of the month clubs and chocolate thing. Like, it's for our people.
Yeah.
It was, and I knew what was in the month before where they had really cool wargaming stuff.
Mm.
And I figured they're not going to double up on that, right? But I figured maybe they'd be similar enough. Like, it would just be my luck that it would be really cool basing stuff or paint or flock or, I don't know, something like that. Plus, maybe some historical-ish wargaming models.
Yeah.
And I opened up, I was like, oh, man, it's Barbarians. What am I going to do with Barbarians? So I was really disappointed. But the fun of it is that you don't know what's going to be inside. It's right, that present, exactly. Right? So Joshua kind of put it into perspective for me a little bit. I need to preface all of this by saying I've talked a lot on the show, right, about the fact that I don't paint. Adrian, you make fun of me for my lack of painting. A lot of other people do. It's okay.
Yeah, I'm not really making fun of you. Really more serious about it in that, why won't you freaking paint so we can get some of these games rolling? But yeah, if you want to take it as me making fun of you, okay.
Good naturedly. It's not like, you jackass, why don't you paint? It's just like, You don't paint, so that means we're not going to do anything. A grumble, right. I guess.
I see. I need to be more explicit about it. Okay, I'll work on that. It's kind of like
use your real life sarcasm tags.
Yeah, it's like the sarcasm tags on Facebook. Okay.
So I've been saying this for years and years and years that I don't paint, and I don't. You can attest to that, right, Adrian?
Yeah, very infrequently. Anyway,
I don't paint. Well, Modelbox got me to paint. A barbarian.
Yeah.
A barbarian woman. She's a queen of, I don't know, whatever barbarian realm. Hassle-free miniatures. The model's amazing. It was a joy to paint. I never say anything is a joy to paint ever in my life.
Yeah.
I'm also working on a second figure, the other one in the box, which I got to the point of priming. And oddly enough, that's the hardest part because like you get to spray that stuff outside and do it. And when you have a 2.5-year-old, you don't get a whole lot of time by yourself outside to spray. And like having her out there, I'd be like, no, honey, don't come near the black spray paint. That's going to go right in your face and give you cancer. Like, stay back. So finding the time to do that's hard.
I spray it on the kitchen table inside and don't worry too much about it. But that's just me.
Well, I know we will all die of cancer, but you'll get it before me, I guess. So it's hard for me to find the time. So I know that this is the next one. It's work in progress. And that'll be both minis from the set.
Yeah.
I ended up subscribing, paying like actual money to Modelbox to get their next box.
Good.
So it's the October 2017 one. They're calling it Orktober. And I'm hoping there's going to be some orcs in it.
Yeah.
I'm head over heels about Modelbox. I still have the caveat, like, you don't know what you're going to get. But I think for someone like me, it makes sense because I look at a project, you know. You talk about these games we want to do in American Civil War, for example, or there's that pirate thing we want to do. And I look and I'm like, we need like 20 guys.
Yeah.
Like a scrapbook. I'm not going to sit and paint 20 guys. So that alone gives me that writer's block. And I'm like, bam, not happening. Or something like a Black Powder or Bolt Action. And I see all those guys and I know I don't have to do them all at once, but just knowing they're there, I'm like, I'm never going to get that done. So why bother trying? Bam, right. I shut it down. But this, it's like, here's a figure. Here's five guys. You have a month to do it or however long. And that is more durable. And I'm thinking something like this could actually ease it so that I can get into painting more stuff. Nothing else has been able to do this. So if I can do it for me, I think maybe there's hope, not just for me, but for other people as well. And it's almost kind of like a magical entity that's done this. So I'm surprised. I really am. I had no intention of painting any of these. And Mike goaded me. And we had that challenge that listeners didn't follow through on. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Whew. I don't have to paint anything because I didn't really want to be pressured into it. And then I kept looking at the stuff. I was like, well, I could paint it. Maybe I will. And then lo and behold, I painted one. And I got the other one in the works. What do you think about Modelbox, Adrian?
For me, it's still, my reaction is still kind of the way Mike Payne's was, which is, I do like the idea, but yeah, not knowing what I'm going to be getting and everything, I don't know, the pain as it is. So if I got 2-3 random models in the mail, you know, say it was 3 orc fighter types, if I didn't have an immediate need for them, I'm not sure I would paint them. But that doesn't mean it's not a bad thing or whatever, you know what I mean? Because it is always fun to get surprises and everything. So I like the idea. I'm not sure I would sign up for it. Maybe I'll give it a roll.
I think you should. I really do. And I'll tell you, I didn't have an answer to it before, but I have an answer now. So like I'm looking at one of the other things that came in the box. It's from Green Stuff World. It's a box of a bag, not a box, because I should know the difference. It's a bag of like, I don't know, 50 or 100 skulls. I'm never going to do anything with these skulls, right? But they're neat. So why not trade them? Trade them off. Yeah, give them away for something else. There's all those like buy-sell trade groups online and social media or whatever. Or even locally, you can, wherever you are, you can do it with your own local group of gamers. Hey, who needs skulls? Bam, you give it away, the skulls to someone. And then maybe they give you a figure you need or something else you need. Oh, I don't really want this model. I'm not going to do anything with it. Who can use it? So you have that whole kind of organic aspect to it where you create that secondary market, and whether you're swapping stuff around for money or just giving away or whatever, I think it actually, you can end up coming out even in the end, I think, so that you'll end up getting enough stuff in your model box that you'll like, and the stuff that you won't, you exchange it to someone else or something else that you do like, because someone's going to want it, right?
Yeah. Well, the skulls, don't give those away. Paint them white and use them for casualty markers.
I could do that. Yeah. Just spray them all white.
Yeah.
Now, the neat thing would be to take a bunch of them, right? Grab like a 40 or 50 millimeter base and just put a pile of them there. And then that would be the casualty marker.
Yeah.
Just like a few people who are dead.
But yeah, no, it's, I don't know. Maybe I'll sign. So what, I haven't actually looked at it in depth. Do you have to sign up for years? Is it 6 months?
So actually it's really cool. Let me pull up the website again. One of the things that I really like about it that kind of helped when I did the review before with Mike and after the fact is they have a blog, and on their blog, they share what was in the preceding month's worth of boxes. So like you can go on now, we're in September 2017. You can see what was in the August one, the June one, July, the May, whatever, all the way back. And so they have that, and they have all these pictures, and some of the stuff will be like with the May one, there's four different Barbarian models. So I happen to get the Barbarian Queen. I don't know, what's her name? Sonya. Oh, Sana. That's it, because I got it here. Sana by Hasselfree Miniature. So I happened to get her, but there was like a guy and there was a couple others. So they show you all the different options that you could have got. They'll be like, you got a variety of whatever. I got some really cool paints, which I used to paint her and going to be using for some other stuff, some good blood effects and things. So you can see all that. But then when you subscribe, you just go to their website, which is super easy. And they're a British company. So you got to keep in mind that they're charging you in pounds and what that would actually convert into for your currency. So here for the U.S., it ends up being a little over $30 a month, which isn't cheap by any stretch. But at the same time, you might get a whole unit of figures. Right. And like I think a paint's like $5 or $6, right? They tend to do Vallejo paints, I think. I mean, they mix it up. There's been some Reaper, I think, and I think they even did like some GW metallics or inks at one point. Sometimes they give paintbrushes, and I think almost every month includes a set of their dice. So you get two dice, we can always use dice. So you can see different things. And if you look in the previous months, you can kind of get an idea of what you think the monetary value is of the contents.
Yeah.
But then you choose, like, do you want to do it every month? Do you want to do it every 3 months? Do you want to do it every 6 months, once a year? And if you do it month by month, of course, it's going to cost you more per month. It's $23.99 British pounds.
Yeah.
But if you do like 3 months, it's $68.97. So that ends up being like half price almost, right?
Right.
It's 6 months is over 130 pounds and so forth. So I would suggest for you anyway, Adrian, do it for 1 month. And then if you like it and you think you're going to get value out of it, I wouldn't keep it month by month just because it's going to end up being more expensive for you. But then like bump it up to like a quarterly one every 3 months. I don't like... Doing it once a year is neat, but that's over 250 pounds. That's a lot of money to drop it in one go for this kind of thing, I think.
Yeah.
But spending, let's convert. But spending the almost 70 British pounds, I don't think that's as bad, you know, on, that's just under 100 American. And you could spend 100 American on hedgerows, right?
Yeah.
And that would give you 3 months of a variety of things, models. And like I looked up, Sana, I think, is like 15 to 20, I think, on the Hasselfree website. And the other Barbarian has to be, you know, probably $10 or something. And it came with two things of paint. So those are like, what, 8 or 9 a piece. And the dice is whatever. And then, I mean, these skulls, that's probably, what, $5 right there worth of skulls?
Yeah.
So, all right. And then it includes the shipping. You're not paying extra for shipping. I believe the whatever is part of the shipping.
That's pretty nice, because I do order figures from the UK occasionally, and the shipping costs will kill you.
So, I mean, you're paying £23.99, and that includes shipping.
Yeah. All right, well, I will look into it a little bit more, and maybe it'll give at least one box a try and see how it goes.
Yeah, I just chance for you to chime in a lot on the show, and also, not that I want to completely flip the coverage and opinions that we did in the model box episode, but through all the discussions with everyone and stuff, I realized that I personally didn't give it as fair of a shake as I would have liked to. Cause at the time I was just like, I'll be honest, at the time I was so disappointed by the barbarians. I was like, really? Barbarians? What the heck am I going to do with that?
Well, surely you've forgotten about our Dungeons and Dragons / Conan campaign.
Well, in Frostgrave is something that you mentioned that we want to do. So Barbarian Queen, and I got, what's his name, Cormac of the Red Hand. And he could be, I don't know, something else for Frostgrave. So, although I'm trying to find a family-friendly word for how I was feeling. I was very unhappy with myself because I did a noob mistake when I was priming him. So I got my box out, got them on the box outside on the grass, and I'm trying to get another angle, and I lose one of the pieces. It's out there, but I don't know where it is. It's this goat head thing that he's supposed to be holding. So now he just has a stump. So I'm going to use some of the blood paint that they gave and just make it look like his arm got chopped off.
Well, no, don't. Let's see it. Does it have his hand? It probably doesn't, huh?
No, it's on the other thing. So it literally stops like,
yeah.
Where is it? It probably stops right about here on like, if yeah. It was a person.
The goat head was the best part. That's what made him look like he was carrying a brew head.
Yeah, but there you go. But like, he has this cool axe thing, hammer. No, that's an axe, double-headed axe. And so, I mean, that'll still work. He's just going to be holding it. And he has this cool dynamic base that I like that they gave. So you get the whatever base, but then they give you rocks to put on it.
Oh, that's so cool.
He's actually like stepping up and he's going to be in triumph. Like, oh, I got my hand cut off, but
yeah,
still it's going to, I mean, I think it's going to look neat. It's just, I'm mad at myself. Cause that's a noob mistake. I should have did it on the driveway. But all I could think of was, I don't want to get black spray paint on my driveway.
Should have done it on your kitchen table. It would have been right there.
There you go. And then I would have gave everyone cancer by getting spray paint on the food. But,
well, they're going to die of something.
We're such an uplifting show tonight. But I am seriously mad at myself for that. It's like, I lost the goat head.
Yeah, that does suck. Oh, well.
I try to think, like, can I go online and try to get, like, another goat head somehow? And, like, would it cost me? Like, how much would the goat head cost me? And then I just realized I got to let it go. Because I searched around for 10 minutes on the grass with my hands and knees. And I'm pawing through the grass. And I'm trying to find. And we have all these wild bunnies in the area that we love because we love rabbits. But like, they poop everywhere. And so every two things I'm clawing through, I'm like, oh, that's another pile of poop. And like, I don't want to touch them. And so I gave up. And I'm sure my neighbors were like, why is he crawling around on his hands and knees? Like, what's he doing? Like, he's digging through stuff. Like, what's going on over there?
And if they'd come over and ask, what are you doing? Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm looking for a goat head.
Yeah, exactly. They'd be like, okay, we should call someone about that.
Oh, for God's sake. Well, anyway.
Weird, but so he's going to get painted. Cormac of, what is it? Cormac of the Red Hand. He'll get painted, but he'll have this bloody stump is what I'll have to do. It's going to look awful, but he'll be painted. And for me, that's huge.
Yep.
And I got to say for, what's her name, Sana, I painted her pretty quickly, actually. So I was impressed with myself. It took 4 days, which sounds like a long time, right? But I'm talking, you know, a couple hours at night. And that includes drying time because I did a quick shade on her. So you got to let that dry for 24 hours. So as soon as I did that, that was like a no-go. And then I did a dull coat. And like, you got to let that dry. You can't just do anything else with it. So
yep.
I was pretty pleased with it, except for the basing was awful because, well, that's another story. But anyway, Model Box got me painting and basing and assembling again. And that just doesn't happen.
All right. Well, we love them for that.
Yeah, especially if I actually end up painting like units and things.
Yeah.
So don't hold your breath because I'm not. But
I'm not.
I really do think I'll continue to paint single figs.
Yeah.
But if I could do the other, then hey, I'm not going to knock on wood because then you'll hear this on the recording. That just won't be good. But knock on wood, someone, please, that I continue this driving. Why don't we move on to one of my favorite segments of the show, Mailbag.
Yeah, I hate hearing from people. Not my favorite segment, but go ahead.
You understand that one of the things that people love about podcasts is that they feel they're part of the community, that they get to know us, that we are like friends and gaming buddies, and that our conversations are like what they would hear hanging out with friends, and that they can therefore be part of it. That whole interaction is a big thing about why people love podcasts and why people love Wargaming Recon, is because they feel we're approachable and friendly and so forth.
Hmm.
Right, you get that?
Well, they probably thought that before you brought me on the show, but
well, your smiling face, of course. So mailbag this time around is actually kind of different in that I'm not sharing feedback. So what we had done had let people know in advance that we were going to be talking about some of the topics that we talked about and asked for things that they wanted to know, questions that they had, or stuff that they wanted us to make sure that we covered and that kind of thing. So getting advance feedback, I guess you could ask, could phrase it as. So listener Jack said on Facebook, because we got this Facebook group and of course on the actual page and everything, he said he had some questions about the hedgerows. So he asked, quote, number one, how durable are they? Number two, how generic are they, meaning how multi-purpose? And number three, how easy are they to store? So Adrian, how durable do you think they are?
I'd say they're fairly durable. I don't have the hedgerows, obviously, but using the flex fences, we've used those a fair amount for bolt action and everything. And I mean, it's not like we bend them into pretzel shapes for every game, but we've done it more than once, and they're fine. Like we talked about, the first couple of times you do it, you're going to lose some rocks or whatever, but it's nothing to worry about. So I would say that they're under normal use, they're perfectly durable. The hedgerows are probably more so, because there's actually, for the most part, looks like less stuff to fall off. But again, even if stuff does fall off, that's by design, so it's nothing to worry about.
I haven't done this, but I think you'd be safe throw them down a flight of stairs.
I haven't done it either, and I'm not going to. But like I say, normal tabletop use, I think they'd be fine.
That thud people hear is me chucking it at my table. And I tell you, it's bouncing, which is interesting. And nothing came off. So durable. And also, I took a swig of water because I was dying from asthma. Not really, but so it got wet and it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, we're good. Wet. My fingers are wet, but stuff stayed on. So it's well protected and cured and all that kind of stuff. What else did Jack ask? He asked, how generic are they? I think we kind of talked about it a little bit, right?
Yeah, they're very generic. Yeah, I mean, anywhere you would see, you know, typical what you would think of deciduous woodlands or that kind of an area, they'll fit right in.
That's one of the things I love about Wargamer's Terrain. He tries to make his stuff so that you could use it for almost any time period in almost any locale. I had suggested to him about trying to enhance his roads, because he has roads that he calls standard roads.
Yep.
I'm like, you got standard rivers and you got deluxe rivers. What do your deluxe roads look like? And he's like, I don't have any. He's like, I kind of want deluxe roads. So I was like, well, what if you did like some like, you know, ruts in there? I think I actually phrased it as like cannon ruts or like tank tread things. And he's like, well, you know, I don't want to do anything like tank specific because people might want to do it pre black powder period or whatever.
Yeah, that won't look good in your Revolutionary War game.
So, I mean, I completely understand. And he believes he wants you to be able to get as much value and use out of these things so that you don't have to like buy the one for World War II and buy the one for doing American Civil War or whatever. Like, he wants you to buy what you need. Yep. And that'll be great. And not have to buy the next new thing all the time because it's a slightly different version of it. And that's something I really appreciate about him and his company and all that they do. And then for storage, do you know what we're going to talk about, Adrian?
I do.
If you do, it's one of my favorite things about the company, which is weird. They come in a box. These delightful branded boxes, which are, I think they're brilliant. I really do. It's fantastic marketing because you store them in it. They come in it if you get them mailed to you. And he does it, I think you have to spend like $40. I think it's roughly where he is for his price point before he puts something in a box. In one of his branded boxes. And then you put it on your shelf. So you put the stuff in and they come. He uses his nice colored tissue paper. So you get that branding again. You put it all in. It has some cardboard in the bottom. You just shove everything in, which I'll do here, and it protects it, and he has, you know, his instructions if they're applicable. He had air and stuff, so you put all that back in, right? And then you close it up, and you put it on your whatever, your shelves and stuff, and they're going to be fine as long as you don't get like a lot of heat or like a lot of water damage or anything. I don't think you have to worry. I think they're going to last. I think they're going to be really easy to store, and they're going to come in their own boxes. And then when you go gaming, just bring your boxes with you, right?
And just they're really sturdy. But I would say extremes of temperature would be the only thing you might maybe possibly need to worry about. Like, you know, if you live in Michigan, maybe don't store them in your unheated garden shed.
But, yeah.
Aside from stuff like that, storage is a non-issue, really.
Listener Jamie had some general questions about terrain. So he wants to know how do you design your tables? And then, well, why don't we tackle that first? Because his other one's directed for you, Adrian. But we can talk about this a little bit. I think, Jamie, that you mean, how do we set them up, right? Would be my presumption. Because we don't make tables, but like how we theme them and use them for games.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much to it, really. I should probably put more thought into it than I do. Usually what I try, tell you what I usually try to go for, if I've got my camera with me, then I go for a layout that's going to get as much of our stuff on the table as we can so we can take cool pictures of it and put it on the website and it'll look good. So that's my thought process there. But really when you're laying it out, what I try to go for, and I'm sure most people do this when they're setting up a table for a game, unless it's a specific historical situation, try to lay the terrain out so that neither side has a particular advantage, because most games when you set them up, you don't necessarily know which side you're going to play, and a lot of times, like Bolt Action, for example, the setup is random, so you don't know where you're going to be starting at. So you don't want somebody to luck into a position where they're immediately, you know, in a dominant position just because they lucked into a good part of the terrain. A lot of people don't look at it that way. A lot of people, and I have some sympathy with this viewpoint too, is that, you know, war is not fair, so obviously somebody's going to try to get the best terrain advantage. And certainly if you're setting up any kind of a historical scenario, you want to try to reflect what the conditions were then. But if it's just kind of a pickup game sort of thing, I think you're better off trying to set up a balanced layout of terrain so that nobody has any particular great advantage at the start of the game. Otherwise, it can be a fun game, but I still think it's better to have a balanced starting setup. So that's kind of what I shoot for.
And different rules also tackle it different ways. GW has their own method that they use. Like you roll dice, or they used to, you would roll a dice and you'd get to pick first, and then the other person would choose where it was placed and oriented, and like what quadrant. Yep. You divide the table into six. Is another method that people, companies use, or some will be like whoever won the last time gets to pick, whoever won the last time doesn't get to pick.
There's all that kind of stuff. Yeah, there's all different kinds of ways of doing it, but that's just kind of what, if I'm the one setting the table up, that's kind of what's on my mind when I'm putting the terrain out. But yeah, there's a number of different ways to go about it, but that's just my thought process for what it's worth.
So I agree with what you're saying, and I like doing it that way. When it's up to me, and this is probably the showman in me, which is weird because I'm an introvert, I want to get as much cool looking stuff on the table as possible. So that it looks good, right? Yeah. So I don't want to just be like, here's every single cool new building I got lined up right next to each other, because then that's like, hey, let's take a picture, but it's not going to look good and it's not going to be good for a game. But like, I want to get like whatever the newest neat thing is so it can be on the table so we can all see it, be like, hey, look, it's so cool and neat. Take pictures and share it with people so people can be like, I like that neat thing. I also want to get the neat thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the same time, I like it when you can have a table where you have a combination of different terrain types. And I think that also ends up resulting in a more enjoyable game, in that it allows the players to really play to their strengths, so that you might have like an area terrain like a forest, or you might have difficult terrain, a stream or impassable, maybe it's an ocean or something, or mountain. But then you also have things like roads, and if you're in the jungle, you're probably not going to have roads, but you know, something like that, and some open area too. So you shouldn't just have generally an open field, where, especially if you're doing something with range weapons where someone can just be like, I'm going to sit back here and that unit's just going to pummel you to death. You should have something in between so that it makes it interesting and adds a little bit of some oomph to it, you know, a little oomph to it. So I like having that with it as well. But I want it to look good, really, more than anything. And that's superficial on so many levels. But
it is, but not really. I mean, the hobby is a lot about, you know, the visual appeal of it. So, I mean, particularly if you spend a lot of time building or a lot of time painting and a lot of money buying all this cool stuff, obviously you want it out on the table. I do anyway.
Well, a few months ago, we got to play Bolt Action on, what was it, a Sunday afternoon or a Monday afternoon? It was a holiday or something. And I looked at the table and we got a lot of compliments on it. So it was a combination of your stuff and my stuff. There was Wargamer's Terrain. There was Bachman Scenescapes Trees. There was the Cigar Box Battle Mat and just a variety of different things. Plus your Crescent Root buildings and your Miniature Building Authority and just like all this kind of stuff. Plus the hill forms that Mike Panda made me. And so it all came together and I looked and I thought, you know, like we get a lot of money on table just in terrain, which was weird. But when we put it together, you know, to create the table, to design the look of it, I think you and I really blended our style so that you really infused that, like, we want it to be equitable. So it doesn't have to be even. It doesn't have to be fair. Yeah. But it has to be equitable for the gaming so that no one had a gigantic advantage that just kind of made it like there was no way you could really have a chance of winning because you're behind a wall that you can't come out of. And I was like, you got a cool church. Let's get the church on the table. We got a cool this. Let's get that on the table. And so we did that. And I think that's a good way to do it. If you can, especially if it's someone you know or other people you know when you're gaming, you should be able to work together cooperatively to create that environment that you'll be able to play in and therefore have a good time. Jamie also asked, and this is for you, Adrian. He says, quote, what does Adrian take into account when planning convention games? Do you think realism, tactics, aesthetics? What do you shoot for and what compromises do you make, unquote?
First compromise I usually make is on the rule set we choose to play because the convention that we generally run games at is TotalCon, which is a convention, although there's getting to be more historical stuff and board games and things like that. It's really geared more towards the role-playing and fantasy gaming crowd. So I tend to assume, possibly wrongly, that those people don't have a huge interest or huge familiarity with wargaming in general, you know, historical wargaming in general, and like the particular era, World War II, Civil War, whatever, don't have a deep knowledge of the tactics and all that kind of stuff. And there are some rule sets that are very detailed and very good at the minutia of such things. But when we run the game there, I tend to go for rules that give you a good flavor, but don't necessarily capture all the minutiae. Black Powder is a great example for when we do, you know, Civil War games or Revolutionary War games. Nobody, and I think probably the Warlord guys might agree with this statement, nobody's going to say that Black Powder is the quintessential set of American Civil War rules, but it gives a you can manipulate those rules and modify them to give a perfect flavor of the Civil War battle. And that's kind of what I shoot for at TotalCon. But that's usually the compromise I make is the rules that we choose to run the game under are not necessarily the ideal set of rules for that particular period. And that kind of sounds like I'm bashing Black Powder. I don't want it to sound that way because I love Black Powder. It's one of my favorite rule sets. But anyway, so that's the compromise I make. And what were the other questions? I forgot.
See, I think actually you're talking about a strength of Black Powder. And I know not everyone loves it, partly because it covers such a broad range and all for some of the reasons that you mentioned. But I think that you have to know, and I know the question was addressed to me, but I'm going to jump in anyway because I'm on the show. So,
do you know who I am? I can do what I want.
There you go. It's my show, darn it. No, but I'm going to jump in because I think what I just want to highlight a portion of what you said that I think is really, really important for anyone who's intending to run a participation game, whether it's at a convention or a game day or a club night or anything like that, anything where you're GMing for other people. And I think you have to take into account the venue and the event. What kind of event is it? What kind of audience are you going to get? And you have to play to their strengths because yes, you are the one doing the work and you're putting the thing on the show, the event and stuff, the game on, but you're doing it for them. So you have to do this as it's your gift to them to make it so that they can try to maximize their fun.
Yeah.
And if you're going to pick a set of rules, let's say you're going to go to a really in-depth historical convention, right, where it's a lot of diehard people who want really in-depth roles, things that are going to cover every single nuance, and they don't mind that one turn is going to take 4 hours to play because that's what they really want, that depth.
Yeah, like
don't do Black Powder, right? Because you got to know your audience. And consequently, if you're going to do something on the flip side, or you're going to try to introduce it to a younger audience or someone who's not used to this kind of thing, you want to make it more accessible. Yeah. And that's why, like, you picked Bolt Action, for example, because I think a lot of people think of World War II gaming. And I'm not saying a lot of war gamers think of it this way, but I think a lot of people think of it as, it's like those movies we've seen. It's like Kelly's Heroes or any of that kind of stuff. And so Bolt Action has, I think, World War II movie feel to it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that doesn't mean it's not a good game or a decent sim of World War II combat, because it is, but it does have that sort of, I hate to say Hollywood, but Hollywood feel to it. Yeah.
Yeah. You get the action and excitement from it and things happen.
Yeah.
At a convention, I think in general, even if someone really wants that in-depth stuff, most people don't want to sit there for 4 hours where they do nothing or not much happens.
Well, you don't even have time to do it when a game session is usually 4 hours max. So.
Yeah. But I mean, if it is such a thing where it is so in-depth, if a turn would take 6 hours and it's intended to be that way, you play one game over the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Most people still wouldn't want to spend like 4 hours just be like, oh, nothing happened.
Yeah, not necessarily.
If you can get up and walk away for 10 minutes and have a conversation and come back and nothing's changed, probably not a good game.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it depends on the audience. Like if I was going to run a, you know, I don't know, Battle of Brandywine at Historicon, I would use British Grenadier. If I'm going to run at a Total Con, I would use Black Powder. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
Jamie was also curious about what you take into account when you play in your convention games and what you think regarding realism and aesthetics and tactics for those games.
Okay, yeah. So what do you take into account? We sort of talked about when we talked about the rules, but you got to take into account the audience and what they're going to kind of want and what's going to attract them. And that also falls into aesthetics. So, I mean, the audience kind of drives everything. I mean, you've got in mind something that you want to get across to them, but you also, they have to actually want to play it. So pick a rule set that matches the audience you're looking at. And the aesthetics, and this is where spending all the money on the goodies will stand you in good stead. I mean, aside from your own enjoyment, when you set the table up at the convention, I mean, maybe it's a little bit vain, but you definitely want people to stop and look and ask, wow, what are you guys doing here? Because that's really part of the reason that we started running these historical games at TotalCon, was to introduce people who maybe never played a historical minis game to that aspect of the gaming hobby, and hopefully get them, you know, a little bit interested in it and maybe want to give it a roll on their own. So aesthetics is probably, for me anyway, one of the most important parts of a convention game. If you just want to put a game together to simulate a particular battle or whatever, you don't need, top-notch visuals or whatever. But I still tend to prefer those because I definitely want to draw the audience to the table. So I think aesthetics are actually really important. The other thing when you're putting a game together for a convention, I think we talked about this in one of the other episodes, is it's got to be fun for both sides. So that's another thing that I'll always compromise on in terms of, historical accuracy. Think of an example, the Russians rolling into Berlin in 1945, if you're doing that scenario, that's not going to be a very enjoyable time for the Germans. So maybe don't actually do that scenario and pick something where it's going to be not necessarily equal for both sides, but both sides have to have a chance to win a convention, a game, is what I'm saying. I read an article, I forget what magazine it was in, but anyway, it was a Historicon. I think one of the Historicons, somebody redid the Battle of Balaclava, the Charge of the Light Brigade. The Light Brigade is going to lose. They're never going to win that particular battle, right? But the intention of the game was not to have an equal contest where, you know, ooh, maybe the Light Brigade is going to beat history and actually, you know, overrun the Russian guns. That wasn't the intent. The guy who did it, and I can't remember his name, which is unfortunate because it's actually a great idea, was just to simulate the Charge of the Light Brigade. And the rules that he came up with to do it followed the charge through the valley, I think in 5 minute blocks, or maybe not even 5 minute blocks, maybe it was 1 minute blocks. So at every minute, you would see how the charge evolved or devolved, if you would rather. So it was more of a simulation, trying to get a decent simulation of that event using a set of war game rules, which would be great for a place like Historicon, not a TotalCon. So, you know, that's, here again, you got to know the audience. So yeah, what do we want to recap? You have to have a game that's where each side has a chance to win. And you can do that either by having equal forces on both sides or equal chances of success. And we did that actually this past year at TotalCon with that scenario we ran for Bold Action for the Battle of the Bulge game. The Americans, in terms of number, have a much inferior force, but they had a very good chance of winning if the Germans didn't, you know, do the right thing. So you can balance it that way. There's a bunch of different ways to balance things, but each side has to feel like they have a shot at winning. The table has to look good, and you got to match the rules to the audience.
I would say, though, when you talk about aesthetics, you don't have to go over the top. I think they need to match what the feel is you're going for. So if you're going for a very old school kind of feel, getting a lot of like top of the line terrain, probably not the good way to go. Or if you're doing like, a Little Wars kind of thing, again, you want a different feel to it. So you're going to want ideas of things. You're not going to want an over the top gaming mat or whatever. You use felt or whatever. You can use things that aren't going to cost you a lot of money and aren't going to be like, wow, but they're going to be a great aesthetic. So it just kind of depends on the feel that you're going for. And of course you have to match the rules and everything else accordingly. But I agree with you. Like, who doesn't love a great table? And first time we ran a TotalCon, I was really worried because people weren't pre-registering. And I was told they don't do it. They get a lot of historical war gamers who go to TotalCon, for example of knowing your convention, but that they just kind of come. People come and they look at the table. What do the minis look like? If you're doing minis, what else do you have? Does it look neat? Do people look like they might be having fun? Do you look interesting? Do you look approachable? Yeah. And that's how they kind of go into doing it. We have another thing from Facebook. Listener Gabriel says, that quote, would be curious to know how fragile and flexible they are, unquote, talking about the Wargamers Terrain hedgerows. And so there are instructions on how to do it, but I'm just going to show you. So you have your hedgerow and you use your thumb and your forefinger wherever you want to do the bend. So you hold it and just, you press firmly, but you don't force it. And I'm doing, if you're watching the video, you can see, but I'm not really pressing that hard. And then you bend. So I got a nice little bend, and you put it wherever you want, and you see, did it do it right? If not, then you can twist it. You can do almost any bend. No extreme bends. You can't really do circles. If you do a bend that's not going to work, it's probably going to just not keep its shape is really what it is. So they are very flexible, not really fragile. You could bend it a million different times, and like I haven't with these, but like you could bend them a lot over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think I know what he's asking there. It's not like a piece of plastic, like your credit card, where if you bend it back and forth,
it's not going to snap off.
Yeah, no. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to break like that. I mean, if you wanted to quote break it, I think you'd have to take a pair of scissors or a knife and cut them.
Yeah, you'd have to work at it. They're quite sturdy.
But there's instructions. You just kind of go back and forth and on it, and really almost any shape or design you can do with them. Just no really extreme angles. So like 90 degree might not be great. The instructions actually say extreme angles less than 45 degrees or circles should not be attempted. But less than a 45 degree angle isn't an extreme angle. That's like this, right? I think he actually means more than. So like if you're trying to do like 180 degree turn, that's probably a bad thing.
Yeah. But no, I've certainly done 90 degree bends in the stone fences and haven't had a problem yet. If I do, I'll let you know. But
so I think things work out pretty well with that. Before we move on to announcements, anything else we want to say about these questions or model box or the Wargamers Terrain Flex Hedgerows?
No, not from me, I don't think.
Okay, so that puts a ribbon on mailbag. And then for announcements, we just have a few, actually, which is great. A little bit of housekeeping. And I know this is when people, because I'm guilty of it as a podcast listener, tend to kind of tune out and be like, okay, the one I done, I'm not going to listen. There's actually some interesting stuff here. So I would suggest perking up your ears and paying a little closer attention to this. So we've mentioned in the past that we have a Facebook group, which is really interesting, a Wargaming Recon Facebook group. People just kind of hang out. We talk about the show, talk about the hobby and things. There's been some really good discussions lately. People have been sharing pictures of stuff that they've been painting. And there's been a lively discussion recently about wet palettes. I'm surprised in that some people are like, no, we don't want to use them. Other people are big fans. Some people never heard of them, or just a whole wide array. So it's interesting to have that on there. And I want to take this moment to say that in 2018, we're going to be doing a wet palette episode where we're going to be looking at a few different wet palettes, kind of comparing them, contrasting them. I hesitate to say review, but basically reviewing. And I've been using a Privateer Press P31, which I know has a mix of emotions from people about it. But we're also going to be able to be doing, including another one in it, which is being kickstarted right now. It's called the Everlasting the Best Wet Palette for Miniature Painting. It's put out by Redgrass Games. They're doing a Kickstarter for it right now. And I want to thank Enfilade and then NHMGS, it's the Northwest Historical Miniatures Gaming Society, because they've made it possible for us to get our hands on one of these. And so we'll be able to include that in 2018 when we do the big roundup and tackle all of it. So you can check out Enfilade by going to wargamingrecon.com/EnfiladeCon. It'll be in our show notes as well. And then, Adrian, I know you're actually not like sarcastic, but you're legit looking forward to this. So tomorrow, we're recording this September 21st. And by the time you guys listen to it, it's going to be October at the earliest. But tomorrow, we're going to be guests on an episode of the Veteran Wargamer, which is Jay Arnold's podcast. So we're doing our recording then. And he'll have released it by the time you hear me talking about this. So we'll have stuff on our Facebook page about that. But it's going to be a good discussion. We're going to talk about like the blending of board games and miniature games and just wargaming in general. And I'm looking forward to it. His show is one of the few that I regularly listen to for podcasts. So I think that'll be pretty neat. And then we should thank our Wargaming Recon Army members. So thank you to Patrick and Kyle from Vermont for their support. You too can become a member, and it costs just $1 per month at minimum. So you can pick other levels. We have other rewards and things like that. But we are only $1 away from meeting our next goal. So if anyone would like to chime in and do so, that would be great. It will help us to continue on with all the things that we do here. Members of Wargaming Recon Army get episodes before non-members. And you also get extra content and other things and stuff. So it should be pretty neat. You can get the show notes for this entire episode by going to wargamingrecon.com/WR193. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR193. Adrian, anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the next episode of the show comes out on October 16th, 2017. That's episode 194. And I want to remind all of you that we are very appreciative that you have listened to this show and listened to this episode. I know you all are very busy, and that no matter how busy you are, you know you have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.